Hey, this is James Arnold Taylor, voice actor, the voice of
Yabba-dabba-doo, Fred Flintstone,
Johnny Test, who's 11 years old and totally awesome,
Ratchet from Ratchet and Clank, Tidus from Final Fantasy X, oh yes, and of course, Obi-Wan Kenobi. It wouldn't be coffee with Kenobi without yours truly. The Force is strong here indeed.
Previously on Coffee with Kenobi.
Star Wars, I remember being a kid, there was a toy store near our house called Play by Play that sold used toys, and I would go there a lot because I was poor, like I could afford it, so I would go get used toys from them, and they started getting Star Wars figures, and I would get those because they were super cheap, because no one wanted them anymore, and like, the woman who worked there knew that I knew everything about it, so she'd be like, do you know what this is? And I'd be like, that's Darth Vader, and she'd be like, can you just write that down? And so I ended up like started like working there, kind of like, you know, like a 10-year-old, like, you know, like toy sommelier, you know, like, and
this is James Arnold Taylor, and you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi. I have a good feeling about this.
Oh, I love that line so much. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Coffee with Kenobi, show number 146. We are your spoiler-free place for Star Wars discussion, analysis, rhetoric, and the best travel tips this side of the galaxy. I'm your host, Dan Z, drinking One Nation Coffee out of a 40th anniversary Star Wars black and red coffee mug. On Coffee with Kenobi, I invite you to join me as we think about the mythology of Star Wars in a whole new way, and maybe laugh a little bit in the process. You are here with your Star Wars family as we go to our favorite coffee shop and talk some Star Wars. On today's show, Tom and I will talk to you about our initial thoughts on the brand new Star Wars animated series, Star Wars Resistance. We also will look at the Solo Blu-ray review that's a long time coming, and I've got some things I wanted to share with you on my overall thoughts on the extras. Not so much about the movie, we already have talked about that a lot, and it's a fantastic movie. And again, I'm so happy that more and more people are getting more exposed to this film who may have missed it in theaters for the first run, so this is great. It's an awesome, awesome, awesome Star Wars movie, and I'm going to talk to you about the extras on the Blu-ray. So pull up a chair. Grab your favorite coffee mug, and let's have some coffee with Kenobi.
So who talks first? You talk first? I talk first.
Joining us today for a cup of coffee is Tom Gross.
Well, hello, everybody, and I'm enjoying a cup of coffee, indeed.
Are you really? Are you actually literally having a cup of coffee?
Well, not as I'm speaking, but in between breaks when you're speaking, I am drinking a cup of One Nation coffee, of course.
Are you really? Well, good.
I am, yes.
You have the Keurig kind, right?
I do. And how is that?
Superb. I'm sure it is. I, of course, love One Nation coffee. This is actually not a sponsor segment. We just really like the coffee. Let's talk Star Wars Resistance. This is obviously hot on everyone's Star Wars plate. And rightfully so, we have now seen three episodes, although I guess technically the premiere episode is two episodes spliced together. So really, we've seen four episodes. I've certainly got plenty to say. And you and I, as is the Coffee with Kenobi tradition, have not spoken about this at all. So let me know what kind of your overall thoughts before we dive into the specific episodes and characters.
Oh, my overall thoughts on Resistance. Well, I guess I'll start by saying I was a little cautious of being too excited about this coming into the series because, you know, we've come off of two wonderful animated series from Star Wars universe with Clone Wars and Rebels. And so, you know, the excitement, of course, is very big. But as we got closer and we had a trailer and then we had the character breakdown trailer, I just kept getting more and more excited about it. And so now that we've seen the three episodes, my overall reaction is I am so pleased. I love the animation, and I'm sure we'll talk more in detail about that as we go along. The animation is fantastic, and I would describe it as being very slick and colorful. But the characters, I really am invested in them already, and I like the fact that we didn't get too much at once regarding the characters.
And that is definitely true.
Yeah. And I guess one more reaction that I would have is the story itself, just I had no expectations of what to think we're going to get other than, I was going to tie in somehow to the Resistance and the First Order. But it really feels like a part of the universe that I have not experienced before.
Very cool. So, and I was sort of cheating here because I do know what you're going to say for this. But a lot of people listening to the show do not. So overall letter grade for just your overall feel for the show itself.
I gave it a solid A.
A solid A, which is very high. Yeah. But you had a pretty legitimate reason why. But we'll hit that at the end. We'll talk about the kid.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to add that to my notes. Kid, and we're going to type it live. There you go, Kid Factor. All right, overall thoughts. I liked the original design when I saw it. I know that Dave Filoni, while he's not actively a part of every episode, I know he was a part of getting it off the ground. And I'm not normally an anime person, but I wanted to give it a chance because it's Star Wars and they're nothing but quality. None of what I've just said is new. What is new is I really enjoyed this. I watched these live. I did this the first time I've ever watched anything with Mason that I'd never seen Star Wars and he hadn't seen was Forces of Destiny, because that was the only stuff that I knew would be kid safe right off the bat. Obviously, the movies I've seen a million times before he saw them, but I'd screen them. I didn't screen this. Bill was on last week about Resistance because he went to the junket for me, and he said it's kid-friendly. Clayton Sandell, who showed up to his five-year-old because he got to see it early, and he said it was kid-friendly. So I watched three episodes with Mason, and I was very happy. I was very pleased with Mason's reaction to the show. I smiled and laughed a lot. I love the connections and the Easter eggs, and the animation quality is a lot more sophisticated than I think I expected. I thought that the X-Wings, especially in the premiere episode, I guess that's the only time we really see X-Wings, looked very layered and three-dimensional. I thought that was really cool. I like seeing the New Republic design on the helmets. That's the first time we've seen it on screen. They were in Aftermath and, in the novels, as far as like the, when they had the page or the chapter numbers, they had that logo around it. Mm. So it was cool to see that. There's some fun Galaxy's Edge stuff, which I'm sure we'll talk about. And I thought it was charming. However, and this is hard because, like so many of us, we're attached to Clone Wars and Rebels. And I know people that were huge Clone Wars fans had a hard time gravitating towards Rebels at first, but then that naturally changed. And that's not, of course, for everyone. Everyone is different. There are no absolutes. We're not Sith here. But it's a little challenging for me because I love Clone Wars. I mean, when I was in that room in San Diego, when they announced the Clone Wars was coming back, I was so incredibly overwhelmed and happy. I can't even describe it. But Rebels is still my favorite. So this becomes the animated show that follows Rebels, which automatically makes it challenging. But it doesn't have to be Rebels. It can be its own thing, and I'm very at peace with that. What I will say, and I reserve the right to change my mind later, and I think that's healthy, that what I've seen so far, this does not feel like a pressing part of the saga that he told. Clone Wars, I mean, that is one of the best things in all of Star Wars since 1977. Rebels had to be told because we're talking about the formation of the Rebellion. That's a fascinating, compelling story. Brought so many aspects of the event together beautifully in ways we never dreamed possible. Now, as Star Wars fans, we can't really live without. And thank goodness we have that in the can for us as his historical context. This, I'm not feeling that way. So I think to really break into that, let's kind of look at some of the character choices and maybe really quickly over the individual episodes. Now, this whole show, CWK show number 146, is not going to be all about it. And I'm going to do some solo Blu-ray stuff because I've been promising that and I need to get that recorded. But I don't know. Does this make sense what I'm saying? I guess, I don't know. I guess we need to go over the overall episodes. Of the three episodes, I liked the first one the most because I'm always interested in how things form. But what about you? What do you think?
The recruit, is that the one you're talking about?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, if I could back up just a little bit, and I know exactly what you're saying about it doesn't, and I know one of your criteria for things like this is it a story that needs to be told? And I'm getting the same feeling as you in regards to, right now I don't see the connection to where like I have to know this information, but I have to say after watching these first three or three and a half or however you want to call the first one, episodes, I personally, I'm okay with that. And not that I know you're not saying that you're not okay with it, but
right.
I'm good with this not necessarily having, you know, some sort of like massive impact on, you know, the main story or whatnot, because I'm seeing it as just a layer of Star Wars that just sort of makes it all, I don't know, this is maybe a little dramatic, but it makes it rich. And so, you know, the fact that I know that there are other things going on in other parts of the galaxy and everybody is not necessarily thinking, you know, Resistance and First Order and the Order of the Galaxy. You know, they're living right. their own lives. And I feel like the people on the platform are really just living their lives. Now, we may see that change, but
I'm sure we will.
But in that first episode, you know, they're just people that seem to be going about their daily lives on this platform and repairing ships as they come in and, you know, taking care of cargo or whatever, you know, whatever it is. So, sorry, I just wanted to get that.
Let's tell you what, let's take a quick break because I think we've got a couple of jumping off points and you're running the risk of being so interesting that I won't get to the Solo Blu-ray. So we got to be careful. Quit being so interesting, Tom. Let's go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we will pick up this conversation on our initial reactions to Star Wars Resistance. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
This is Coffee with Kenobi. Oh, pass the cream, would you?
Well, look at the time. It is time for our CWK pour-over exclusive clip for the week. This is, of course, a clip from our Coffee with Kenobi Patreon exclusive show, which listeners can have for their very own for $5 or more a month. And we've got a huge back catalog of old shows for you to choose from. It's a weekly show, comes out every Sunday. And this week we talked about what we know so far about Galaxy's Edge, including some insider information that you may not have heard anywhere else, as well as Tom's thoughts, at least this clip, is Tom's thoughts on his understandable trepidation about the potential for Galaxy's Edge, as well as celebration. Well, Tom, feel free to take away because I could easily talk the entire portal.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because, you know, I'll start with the things that I don't look forward to. And it's clear. I mean, anyone who's a friend of the show knows that the crowds are the thing that would keep me away from something like this. Sure. And that has nothing to do with the attraction itself. It's just the nature of the beast. And so it's not anything negative about Galaxy's Edge or anything like that. It's just a personal thing on my side that I really get stressed around crowds. And when I have to navigate a lot of people, and even wait in lines, crinkles my foil, or whatever you want to call it.
Grinds your gears.
Crinkles my foil.
Crinkles like my foil.
An old adage.
Yep. Hold on to that one because there's going to be an appropriate place to use that. That's true. But you know, at the same time, it would be a feeling like going to Celebration. You know, everyone's there for the love of the same thing. I feel, and so, but I think when it comes to that whole experience, I think the thing that I would look forward to most is the experience of staying in the hotel. That just, yep. I just dream about how cool that whole experience is. Like, I can't even, like, I've seen the pictures.
I shared that clip with you because I think it's really cool as far as the authenticity of the show. Everything isn't, I love this, I love this, I don't like this, I don't like that. We talk about how we feel as far as things that make us excited, things that make us trepidatious about big events like Galaxy's Edge opening. And, you know, the notion it's going to be hard to get inside there. What are the lines going to be like? What are the crowds going to be like? How is that for first-time Celebration attendees like Tom's going to be for Celebration Chicago? It's a lot of cool stuff. Basically, we keep it real, and we want you to feel like you're a part of the conversation, because that is what Coffee with Kenobi is all about. And speaking of what Coffee with Kenobi is all about, none of this is possible without our CWK contributors, like Ben Elkington, Rebecca Raven, Dennis Keithley, Terry Lee, Melinda Wolf, Wayne Booker, Aaron Harris, Chris Kavarka, Angela Sauce, Mediocre Jedi, Phil Picaro, Tim Bungaroth, Chris Metz, LJ Souter, Thea Selby, Jeff Ellis, Daz Davies, Christian Dale, Jason Hall, Brian McKinney, Connie Shee, Mike Audette, Jared Cantor, BJ Smith, Eric Struthers, Nick Dico, and Mark Suter. In short, you help support the show, and you get a great exclusive podcast out of it. So if you want to find out more about it, go to CWK's Patreon page, which is patreon.com/coffeewithkenobi, or you can check out the banner on the top of our webpage as well. Thank you so much. One Nation Coffee is the official brew of Coffee with Kenobi. It smells amazing and tastes even better. They even have a subscription service that is really convenient. Be sure to go to www.onenationcoffee.com to order the official brew of Coffee with Kenobi today, and be sure to enter the code Kenobi10 for 10% off your first order. We are back, and we are talking about our initial reactions to Star Wars Resistance. We were just discussing the merits or the challenges of, is this a story that needs to be told? And I'm such a stickler for that kind of thing. Story is so fascinating to me. If I ever do go back to school to get a PhD, I think I'm really going to study story, because I just think it's just so fascinating. I think it's cool. You mentioned before that you're okay with it. I'm okay with that too, to a degree. The challenge I run into with Solo, I feel Lisa Dullard is out there with shuddering a little bit, as I mentioned Solo, because she is the biggest Solo fan ever, and I think that's marvelous. And I love Solo, and I love it more and more as time goes on, as we'll talk about at the end of the show. And so that one doesn't necessarily have galaxy-wide ramifications, and this doesn't either. I guess let's just jump right to it. The challenge I have with this series so far, and it's very, very early on, and I'm still going to catch every episode first airing, of course, is that Yeager and Kaz's, or Yeager's, is it Yeager? Yeager? I keep thinking of Yeager because of that awful Pacific Rim series.
Oh.
But their relationship is so stagnant. I don't expect major growth or change in the first couple episodes. I don't think that would be good storytelling either. And I'm not saying this isn't, but to me, you shouldn't have the exact same conversation two times an episode, you know, where you say, you got to be careful. You got to slow down. You can't let people know you're a spy. Oh, I'm fine. I'm fine. No one knows. No one's going to, you know, I just didn't need that. In fact, I'm glad it wasn't a drinking game, because my poor 5-year-old would have had a hard time. I'm going to cut that out. Let me do a pause. Let's do a pause. So anyway, it just seemed to happen a lot, and I feel like there are other ways to show the and the growth that they need without it being that. I found that a little redundant.
I would agree with that aspect. I guess the reason I'm hanging on to that relationship is you know that there's a story behind, and you were calling him Yeager. For some reason, I had written down Yerrick or Yerrick, but we'll get it straight before the end of the season, I have no doubt. But I know, you know, there's a story to be told there, and we got a little hint of it when they did a little snooping. But so I guess I agree. I'm waiting for something more to be said or something more to be revealed. And I did tire a little bit of Kaz's just naive. I don't know. What is it that he's so like tied up in, I'm going to be a spy. I'm going to be a spy. And I wish
it's like a kind of like an immature kid.
Yeah. And, And I know I felt that way about Ezra a little bit in Rebels and Ahsoka in. So I think that there's, I'm willing to give it several episodes to let that work its way out. But I'm with you. I'm ready for that repeated, you know, you can't do that. There's ramifications that go along with that. You just need to be patient and just do what you're told.
Yeah. Expand on that notion without practically doing almost the exact same dialogue multiple times per episode. But I do need to say, I absolutely love Kaz. I mean, I cannot tell you how drawn I am to Kaz already. I mean, it's not a Kanan level love affair, but it's mm-hmm. pretty great. I find him charming. I find him endearing. I love his exuberance. I love his flaws. I love that he's a great pilot. And I love that when he's in the air, he's like a different person. Because that's also yes. a nice metaphor for his what he's going to be like as an adult if he doesn't crash his speeder before then. And I found him to be fantastic. I love that he and BB-8 are chums. And I absolutely loved Poe in that episode. I mean, of course, Oscar Isaac being in it just gives it that authenticity. But remind me even more of how much I love Poe, because whether he's in the films or the comic books or this series, always the same interesting character. It would be so easy to write him as some cocky Solo replicant, and they don't. He's his own man. He's his own character. And I think that's fantastic. I also love, by the way, because I know we're almost running out of time on this segment too, I also really love the glimpses of the First Order that we saw. I love that we got to see a TIE go to hyperspace, which is definitely not something that is
yes.
very common in the original trilogy era, if ever, because they didn't have the hyperdrive. Really great. The supporting cast, I'm withholding judgment on it for now. I do like Yeager quite a bit. But again, I want to see more from him, but I already said that. All of his compatriots that are really annoyed by him, I'm not crazy about them yet, especially that little guy that causes trouble and made him cheat in darts. That drove me nuts. Mm-hmm. And it's supposed to. So and I don't know. I've taken up a lot of airtime, but those are basically the things that I love. I want to make sure I get all those things out there. What about you?
Yeah. You know, the character that I think I've enjoyed the most is Tora. I can't wait to learn more about her. I love her hotshot attitude. She's cute, but, you know, tough, but also nice and like friendly, you know, smiles at you while she says, well, maybe you'll do better if I don't beat you. You know, I love her attitude. And I have to say, my kids loved Niku.
Oh, yeah.
For Niku, his literalness and yes. not getting the joke and all of that was great. And, you know, one more thing that I really enjoyed about these first episodes is the community on the platform. And those were the aliens and all the different aliens from all the different trilogies. I mean, we saw aliens like Snaggletooth from the original trilogy. We saw some... Yeah. We saw, you know, some people from the Clone Wars on there, and I'm escaping. It's the blue skin. Oh, in the Clone Wars, it's royalty. I can't remember their names now. But then there are Clone Wars aliens as well. The barkeep, isn't that the same race as Unkar Plutt?
That's right.
The gal who runs the bar. So I like the nod and the tip of the hat of that community on the platform is so much fun. And we just would say, oh, that's, and we started calling out the movie that alien was from. And so it was just,
well, that's
just
fun.
Really cool. Yeah.
See, that's the pulse of why this show is going to be fun for both of us. Cause we like watching it with our families mm-hmm. and all your kids loved it, which is a fun thing as well.
Which I think this is where my final comment will be. The reason for my A is because as I was sitting there, I have my youngest daughter. I feel like over the years as she's been growing and appreciating stories more, she's felt a little left out of the Star Wars story. And she gets a little frustrated that maybe it's my thing and my older daughter's thing. And so when I said, hey, let's go watch this brand new show, she said, what is it? And I didn't want to tell her it was Star Wars. And I told her, I said, it's about a pilot and maybe just a bunch of pilots and they're flying and they're going to race. And it's going to be a lot of fun. And so she was a little bought in by that. But then, of course, at the very beginning of the show, of course, it says Star Wars Resistance. And so she wanted to tune out and she got a little frustrated with us. But then as the show went on, she stayed in the room and I said, hey, you don't have to stay here if it's going to make you mad. You can just go do something else. Well, she stuck around and I watched her out of the corner of my eye and she became 100% invested in the first episode. And she stuck around for episodes 2 and 3 as we binge watched the first bit. And she even started asking questions. For example, when Kaz crashes, when he's racing Tora, she says, did he win? And I said, well, what do you think? Did he win? And she goes, I don't know. And I said, well, I don't think he won, but you know what? He survived. And she knew exactly what I was talking about. And so A to Star Wars Resistance for being a buy-in point for my youngest daughter.
That's great. That's what it's all about. I mean, that's the gateway, right? I mean, maybe this will be the show that someday later when she's one of the co-hosts of Coffee with Kenobi, she talks about Resistance as her. Is the thing that brought her in. let's see, real quick, because we need to wrap up this segment. The only other thing I want to mention that I absolutely love is the sound effects in the show, especially during the racing and when they go through those rings. I just think that's stellar. Any last minute things you love before we close this segment out?
The only thing is I just loved the animation. And the one thing I want to point out was at the beginning of the second episode, when they show the platform and the stormy waters and the waves, I just sat there and just took it in. It was so beautiful. And I can't wait for more scenes and episodes that have that kind of imagery in them.
Oh yeah. And I think we're going to see a lot of those. Plus the morality in the third episode with the individual whose name escapes me now that befriended Kaz, that led to some good conversation with my son. So I did appreciate that for sure. All right. Very good. Well, that was fun. Let's go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we are going to have some news on what's going on in the world of Star Wars. So Tom, stick around, would you please?
Oh, I will.
All right. You heard it, folks. He said he's going to. He promised. All right.
Good idea. Promise.
All right. We'll be right back.
Greetings. This is Obi-Wan Kenobi, and you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi.
Let's talk about Harry's Razors now. I'm not suggesting that you should start doing some early Christmas shopping for, you know, Christmas stockings, because it is early October. But if you did, or you wanted to surprise that special someone in your life, because they are, of course, someone who shaves fairly regularly, but they have a hard time finding a good quality blade, well, I have got just the product for you. And, of course, I'm talking about Harry's Razors. If you want a close, comfortable shave, an awesome glide to the razor with a weighted ergonomic handle design and the scent of shave gel that is awesome, Harry's is for you. Harry stands by the quality of their blades, but they know that switching razors is not an easy decision. So they have created a trial offer for you. Claim yours today by going to harrys.com/CWKfamily. And that's all one word. Harry's founders were fed up with overpaying for expensive razors with unnecessary features. They know a great shave comes down to great blades made with sharp, durable steel that lasts. And that's why they bought a factory that's been making some of the highest quality blades in the world for over 95 years. By selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's can offer their blades at a price much lower than the leading brand, just $2 per blade compared to $4 or more. And you have a quality guarantee here. If you don't love your shave, let Harry's know within 30 days and they'll give you a full refund. Get a $13 value trial set that comes with everything that you need for a close, comfortable shave. A weighted ergonomic handle, 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. Listeners of my show can redeem their trial set at harrys.com/CWKfamily. Make sure you go to harrys.com/CWKfamily to redeem your offer and let them know I sent you to help support the show. We are back and then we have a couple of news stories. Tom, what do you have for us?
Well, last week we brought you the recently released description and title of the upcoming Star Wars live-action TV show produced by Jon Favreau, The Mandalorian. Soon after that announcement, the first image from production was released showing, well, a Mandalorian character in brown and tan tones who we are to presume, I suppose, that is the gunslinging Mando in the description, with a pistol in his holster on his hip and what appears to be a custom stock of a rifle on his back. Even more, released along with the images is an episodic list of directors with none other than Star Wars, The Clone Wars, and Rebels animated series producer Dave Filoni directing episode one. Other directors include Deborah Chow of Jessica Jones, Rick Famuyiwa of Dope, Bryce Dallas Howard of Soulmates, and of course, Taika Waititi of Thor Ragnarok. Now, that list of directors is worth the price of admission, if you ask me.
So Taika Waititi and Bryce Dallas Howard, who, of course, is in the newer Jurassic World movies and is the daughter of Ron Howard, they are both, there's speculation that they are going to be acting at least in one or two episodes as well.
Oh.
This is gigantic. I mean, you're talking about incredible, incredible A-list talent that's going to be behind the reins of this thing. And the image is magnificent. I mean, we don't know anything about the character except that, did they say, in fact, that it is a Mandalorian or is it just Mandalorian armor? Because Jango Fett and Boba Fett aren't Mandalorian.
I made that assumption. That was all me. So, no, I don't think there's any definitive explanation, but definitely Mandalorian armor.
Well, I like the way that you said it because you didn't make a proclamation either way. You're just going by what they've given us. Mm-hmm. And that's cool. I mean, that's part of the mystique of what we're going to have to figure out, because this is going to air on the Disney streaming service. It sounds like, according to Jim Hill, it's going to be Disney Play. And we've talked about that on previous shows too.
Okay.
They haven't officially said that yet, but Jim's pretty reliable.
Oh yeah.
I think the image is great. I'm already like this character more than I like Boba Fett and Jango Fett. I do.
Oh, wow.
I just like how he looks stocky and no nonsense. And he just looks like a really cool lone. I mean, again, that Clint Eastwood vibe. I think it's great.
And you know what I noticed is missing from his helmet is that little piece that comes off around the earpiece and goes straight up. And it's like a little telescoping lens that is not on that helmet, at least that we can see. I don't know.
Right. Maybe he was on his way to Costco to get it.
Yeah, or needed a repair or something. But yeah, that list of directors, basically, to me, what that says to me is, look, we are putting every step forward to make the Disney Play or the Disney streaming service A+, and we are making it with Star Wars. In our second story now, I don't know, have you heard of Project Porg? This project... Excuse me. This project, announced by ILM X Lab this week, will bring Porgs our way via a mixed reality. Now, this description comes directly from the Project Porg announcement, and it tells all. In Project Porg, you will need to gain the trust and affection of your Porgs by offering them treats and playing with them. Teach them how to maneuver real-world environments with care instructions from Star Wars' most meticulous droid, C-3PO. Now, Project Porg will be released for free downloads this December. Now, stay tuned.
I mean, is this the most fun you've ever had in your life, saying a new story?
Well, it's right up there with Bleep Bloop Blueberry.
Yeah, that's
I have to say, yes.
Yeah.
But Project Porg sounds, I mean, I've no doubt if I were to download this and we have the VR goggles, I have no doubt that I would have two children fighting over the goggles to play with the Porgs. Oh, hands down. It would be the most popular thing in here for weeks.
Oh my gosh. Can you imagine? That sounds so fun. So darn fun and so charming. And, you know, regardless of whether people love or aren't as sure about The Last Jedi, that's probably a generous way to say a lot of people, or at least a lot of people claim that there are a lot of people who don't like it, although box office and Blu-ray sales and downloads don't seem to indicate that. Either way, you don't really hear too many cross things about Porgs, and they are adorable, and this is such a fun little idea. I love it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Very much. Well, thank you for that news segment. We will go ahead and take another break. And then when we come back, I will give my long overdue review of the Solo Blu-ray. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
Coffee, tea, or me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. It's Coffee with Kenobi.
Don't forget, One Nation Coffee, they are the official brew of Coffee with Kenobi and exactly the coffee I start my morning with every single day. It's absolutely the best. You can start your coffee subscription, so you'll never want to miss out on the best coffee in the galaxy by going to www.onenationcoffee.com today. Plus, enter the code KENOBI10 to set up a coffee subscription and save 10% off your first order. MEI and Mouse Fan Travel, let's talk Disney World, because I've been seeing some pictures of Disney World and how it's all decorated for Halloween, as well as the Food and Wine Festival conversation that people are having. And it makes me want to go back there so much. And of course, if I'm going to do that, I'm going to go to Mouse Fan Travel. They have signature service and expert advice to help clients maximize their vacation time and dollar. And they help your family enjoy everything the Disney theme parks and the cruise line have to offer. They can help you plan every single detail and share invaluable tips with you. Be sure to go to www.mousefantravel.com today and let them know Coffee with Kenobi sent you. We are back, and it is time to look at the Solo Blu-ray and digital download. The extras on this thing are magnificent. It seems that, well, all these Star Wars extras are always great on the Blu-rays. I mean, ever since the beginning with the VHS tapes where Leonard Maltin interviewed George Lucas, we've always had fun looks at stuff. This one is different than The Last Jedi and The Force Awakens. It feels more cozy. And that may seem odd, but it's, when you think about it this way, just kind of a warm look at the insights that went into making this film, the decisions, the actors, the talent behind the scenes for special effects and visual effects, the sound editing, the stunt work, Ron Howard's interactions with the cast and crew. It's really quite lovely. I think it adds even more to this film, which again, of course, I'm not really going to mention much of the film here. Suffice to say, the Blu-ray version, the 4K version is gorgeous. It looks tremendous. And seeing this at home, I love watching it on surround sound. I just love it in the comfort of my home. It's just a fun movie that is very rewatchable and tremendously fun. So the extras, the first thing that they are touting is the round table with the cast. It's basically Ron Howard interviewing everybody and asking them about their experiences of the film, how do they feel when they were hired, all those kind of fun little things. And it is so great. The stories, I love seeing, as a fan, I love seeing actors interact with one another, and I feel good about them genuinely enjoying each other's company, because we forget, this is a job. This is a job for them. Yes, it's fun. They get to play in the Star Wars universe, which has got to be an amazing thing beyond my wildest dreams. But this is also a job for working professional actors. And I think you see that, and I love them talking about this thing that is their craft. It's how they feed their families, and they clearly love each other's company, and there's some great stories there that I think are really, really winning and definitely worth watching. I think that's probably my favorite thing on here. Now, there are a number of other little snippets and vignettes. For example, Kazdan on Kazdan is great because it's the two Kazdans, Jonathan and Lawrence Kazdan, of course, working together and talking about the writing process, kind of Kazdan's look at the Star Wars saga. And I love how he feels very much an ownership and a kinship with the original trilogy. And since he wrote two of the original three films, that makes sense. And naturally, he is the world's foremost expert on Han Solo. He's given him the punchiest dialogue throughout the entire thing. Really, the only time he hasn't written Solo on screen is A New Hope, when you think about it. So he knows that character. And A New Hope is what inspired him anyway to fall in love with this universe, as with all of us, of course. I guess that's kind of redundant, but more specifically with Han Solo. And I love that Jonathan Kazdan, who, by the way, shares the same birthday with me, which I just found out at the end of September, which I thought was really, really fun. He is a huge Star Wars canonical fan, and I love that. I love that about him. He basically is the translator for anything that's not the original trilogy. At least that is how I perceive this section, and I thought that was cool. He's a cool dude. They both are. This is a fun one to watch. It's only about 7 minutes or so. Then we have remaking the Millennium Falcon. And so there's where the controversy comes in, because Lawrence Kazan says it's the main vehicle central location of the film. And then Ron Howard comes on and says it's a character. So that continues the debate that I continue to have with Tom and Corey and other people about if the Falcon is a character or not. And I love that, and I hope that we always talk about that, because that's good food for thought. It opens up some great discussion about character and dynamics and what moves a story along, and I think it's great. I love this one because I love the Falcon, and I love the fact that there are a lot of things here for you to really look at as far as the design. I love that they built a very life-like Millennium Falcon at Pinewood Studios. I love seeing how they make the movie. I liked the Donald Glover tour of the Falcon, which was already online before this was released anyway. And it's just neat. Who wouldn't want to go on the Falcon at Pinewood Studios? That I think that would be the ultimate dream. And it's also cool that we find out that this is still the same Falcon from The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi, but they've covered over the original walls to give it that new clean look. Then we have the escape from Corellia, and I like this because they talk about how this story is really appealing because Kazan wanted to see what would a youthful Solo be like, and it shows sort of like, I mean, Corellia, the design of Corellia, it's a very depressing place. They said it reminded them of an industrial Venice, and it's very stunt driver heavy, this part. It shows a lot of the opening chase sequence, which I know a lot of people love, and I like it fine. It doesn't really like blow me out of the water, although I appreciate what it's trying to do. But this made me appreciate it even more because they're really driving these vehicles, and then they digitally go in later and remove the wheels. I thought that was cool. It gave me much more appreciation for that, and I think that's kind of the purpose of these things anyway. The train heist, another very similar feeling to what I had for the original. The train heist was fine. I've never been a big fan of train heists in old Western films either, even though I like Western films. I find it to be kind of a trope that doesn't really excite me. But this added to it, because when I see how much actual stunt work went into it and how marvelous the finished product is, I mean, I could not believe how incredible it was, what they worked with and how they added in the special effects and layered it and the sound they put in and the stunt work. And I was blown away. I thought that was so cool. It made me like that scene so much more. I just thought it was very, very rich. And I think people who are aspiring filmmakers, this sequence and then another one I'm going to talk about later really show you what goes into making a film and the love and the care. That's why when people say, oh, I don't like this movie or blah, 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 that's fine. You don't have to like everything. I don't like everything, but you can't disparage the care and the craft and the talent that went into this thing. I mean, it is a 100% high quality film, and you can just see that by this train heist documentary part alone. The Team Chewie thing I love because I love Yunus Suotamo because I got to interview him and talk to him a couple of times, and I just know what a good guy he is. And seeing everyone show how much they love him, how much they love Chewbacca. This movie, as I've said before, gave so much to Chewbacca, gave him more legitimate warmth, and he's not necessarily Hamlet, okay, but he's still more well-rounded than he ever has been because he's got more screen time. He has more chance to act and interact with Han Solo, and the fact that we know so much more about Chewbacca, who doesn't speak English, but Shriwook, but his body language and the way he trained, the stunt work that went into this thing is so cool. I mean, really, really impressive. Total hats off to Yunus for that. How they stitch each hair by hand, I think that is so cool. Well, well worth your time. That might be one of my favorites on there as well. Then we have Becoming a Droid, which is all about L3, and I think it highlights Phoebe Waller-Bridge and how charming she is. And yes, I've made it very clear that L3 is not my favorite character, but not because I don't like Phoebe Waller-Bridge. I thought she was great. I thought she was great in The Junket. I love her sincerity. I like the idea of L3. I think they made it a little more didactic than they needed to, and I think that can be sort of a challenge, an obstacle to what you're trying to achieve. That being said, this gave me more context for L3, and I think it was very enriching, and it made me look at her and appreciate her that much more. And again, just how they make this film and her talents and how light and how much fun she is and how much fun she had making this character and what it means to her. I thought that was really, really lovely, and I really appreciate that so very much. Then we have Scoundrels, Droids, and Cards. This is basically them showing Sabacc. It was fun to see Alden trying to pronounce Sabacc because they have some little bloopers and stuff. And Alden seemed to have so much fun making this film and being Han Solo. And I think that charm and that sincerity and that kind of youthful innocence in a way that both Alden has and Han Solo has at this point in the story really come through in this. I like seeing some of the rules of Sabacc and them walking around the bar, and some of the design in that thing is beautiful. I didn't really realize, I guess I should have, the cantina inspired it. I guess that makes sense. I talk about duh. I've had a couple of duh moments on this episode. And I just like the stuff on the walls. I just thought it was great. I don't remember that beast looks kind of like a giant water buffalo. But boy, was that fascinating. They really, again, my hat's totally off to everyone who created Solo. Then the Kessel Run, this might be the coolest one, because the way they made the Falcon in the Kessel Run, and they explained right away, look, this is a different measurement than what they said in the New Hope, and it didn't make any sense logically, but now it does. And they show the making of the Falcon. Mostly it's the close-ups of the cockpit. While they're making it, they had stunt men come in there and explain to them what your G-forces would do to your body if you're actually flying something like this. And the fact they built this gigantic screen, almost like you're looking at Soarin at Epcot at Walt Disney World, and how the screen makes you feel like you're a part of it. That's what they did for the actors. So they were getting to really experience this in ways that George Lucas never dreamed possible in the prequel trilogy filming. And that was great. That made me think, wow, they were doing this. They weren't just acting and looking at a green screen or a blue screen. They were performing to what they saw. And that is so cool. Gives some authenticity to a otherwise impossible moment. And that, again, a lot of weight here. I'm not going to say gravitas, because it's still done with fun and joy, even though there's cost in the movie. But it really does add some dimensions to it that I think are wonderful. My son's been asking me a lot about how movies are made and things like that, and this will be a good little section to show him. I think it really enlightens us on the process and the craft of movie making. It's really serious stuff, and it's really, really fun. All right, so then we get into the deleted scenes. There are quite a few of them. I'll just kind of go through them briefly. We've got Proxima's Den. This is basically Han finding Kira and saying, hey, we got to get out of here. We're going to run away. At first, she pulls out a knife because, you know, she's sleeping or seems to be sleeping. And I'm glad they cut that one out, because, I don't know, I like the way they developed it originally anyway. That was too dark of an opening, so I'm glad they cut that sequence out. Then we have the Carillion foot chase, which is really kind of interesting. It's them running on foot before they get in the speeder, and they have to hide in this barrel with these goofy, yucky eel worm things that look kind of like small white worms. And Han's like, no way, I'm not getting in that. And then Kira says, we better get in here. There's a bit of a romantic tension there, which is fun. And then when they get out, there's a really nice homage to Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, which I love, and I'm sure that's why they put it in there. Probably smart to take it out because it slows down the sequence, but really, really cool that they did that nod to River Phoenix. Then the Battle of... Oh, no, I'm sorry. Before that's the Han Solo Imperial Cadet, and basically shows his last time flying. It's cool to see him flying a TIE. It shows him in front of the tribunal and shows how he ends up on Mimban. And I thought it was cool. I thought, well, geez, if this is really the Empire and he's this sarcastic, which I guess should be pretty obvious, he's asking for trouble, which is why they sent him down to be in infantry. And it was fun. I'm glad that I got to see it. I don't know that I needed to have it in the final cut, but I don't think it would have been terrible if it was. That being said, since we get to see him fly for the first time in the Falcon, that is probably why they cut that. It means much more to see him in the Falcon as a pilot for the very first time. So I am glad of this. It also adds more credence to the speeder chase, because you get to see him driving or piloting something. Then the Battle of Mimban and Han versus Chewie are two extended sequences. For the Battle of Mimban, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing the planet correctly now that I keep saying it over and over again, but it basically just shows one of the extra people that's in their crew. And before Han joins up with them, of course, before he joins up with Beckett and his crew, and shows that person's death. He's firing a heavy artillery. And it just, you know, adds one more character to the mix. It didn't make sense to put it in the final cut because it's just kind of a throwaway thing. They don't need to have cost at that aspect. It makes what happens to Val in Rio much more powerful later in the film. So that was a good choice as well. The Han versus Chewie thing, I'm glad they took it out, but there's some parts of it I wish they would have put in, because that sequence still bothers me. And I mean, we need to have it, and I like it. I just don't like to see Han and Chewie fighting. Because, you know, they're both brothers, and I just love their relationship so much. So, and, I'm not naive, of course. They have to have some sort of an obstacle and be at each other's throats. It helps explain how close they are. I mean, that's very much a brother thing on occasion. What I don't like is seeing how Han really hurts him, rips off his fur and it bites him, which is in the final scene. And I thought, oh, and I actually audibly said, oh, no, because I felt bad for Chewie. But Chewie definitely beats the snot out of Han. There's no question there. One thing I do like that I think is very valuable that adds a little more to Chewbacca, which I think was missing from the final cut, is it shows Chewbacca as empathetic. When he thinks Han is hurt or possibly dead, he looks sad. He doesn't want to hurt anybody. He doesn't want to kill. I don't like how they frame the final cut that it looks like Chewbacca just kills and eats people. I mean, that's just how I interpret it. That always bugged me, and that might be why that sequence is more challenging for me to digest. But this shows Chewbacca on a couple of occasions as sweet, as soft-hearted, as not wanting to hurt somebody. He just wants to kind of be out of there. He doesn't want to be in shackles. Probably reminds him of Kashyyyk. And I thought these moments in that deleted extended sequence really showcase that. I missed that. I'm glad I got to see that because I needed to see that my Chewbacca, that I, you know, we all form sort of our own character profile in our heads of these characters that we feel so close to. I'm glad to see that in this scene. The next couple are really quick. There's a snowball fight, which, by the way, which they show in the Team Chewie documentary. My gosh, do I love that sequence. It is so playful. It is so fun. It showcases how they are and how they're sort of immature and brotherly and throwing snowballs at each other and wrestling in the snow. And so Beckett's like, all right, enough. So I guess I could see where they took that out because Val had just died and they were walking and they were very contrite. Han was very contrite for what happened, even though it wasn't his fault. So I can see where they took it out because it takes away from the power of Val's death. But boy, is it so charming and playful. I wish it was somehow could have been re-edited. Someone much smarter than I would have to figure out a way to put that in and keep the narrative flow going, but very, very fun, very, very charming, delightful sequence. Meeting Dryden basically was just an extended sequence of Han eating something nasty. It was kind of falling all over him, going down his shirt, and Kira looks at him like, okay, please stop. This is serious. Grow up, dude. And I liked it. It was fun to see Han. Any more of Alden as Han is great to see. Makes sense it wasn't in there, but it was still charming. And then the coaxium double cross basically shows the impetus for the idea of them double crossing Dryden Voss at the end. I'm glad they didn't put that in because the reveal the first time you see the movie is much more powerful when you see that we basically find out when Dryden Voss does too. And I think that was more effective storytelling. So that's pretty much it for what happened on the Blu-ray overall. Wonderful. It doesn't have the hardcore documentary that The Last Jedi and The Force Awakens did, but boy, is it great. It gives you some warmth and texture to this film and the behind the scenes. These guys really love each other, and they have a great time doing it. That round table, to be honest, is extra special to me because it was filmed during the junket. I can tell because they're all wearing the same clothing that I got to interview some of them in. So that made me feel a part of the experience even more, which is great. And I don't think you needed to be at the junket to feel that because of the way they filmed that one. It's really, really good. Let me know what you think about the Solo Blu-ray and the extras. Thank you for your patience as we got this one out there. So many other things happen, mostly around Star Wars Resistance, which is why this one is a little bit delayed, but well worth the wait. Let's go ahead and take a break. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
Listening to Coffee with Kenobi, you are the podcast you're looking for. This is...
Before we get to email, I want to thank our CWK sponsors, One Nation Coffee, Harry's Razors, and Mouse Fan Travel. Please support them the way they support our podcast. And remember to listen to new and archive shows of Coffee with Kenobi wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict, Stitcher, Spreaker, Overcast, Blog Talk Radio, Player FM, or our website, www.coffeewithkenobi.com. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Pinterest, and Tumblr, and we'd love for you to check us out there. Also, be sure to listen to our CWK family of shows, including Legends Library, Rebels Reactions, Comics with Kenobi, and Lattes with Leia. Please leave a review for each of their shows as well. Be sure to subscribe to each of them individually, as they all have their own feeds now. That will do it for Coffee with Kenobi, show number 146. A big thank you to Tom Gross for jumping on and, of course, doing news as he does each and every week, but for helping me articulate my thoughts on my initial reactions to Star Wars Resistance. And it's super cool for me because when Tom and I talk, it helps me think much more clearly, just like when Corey was on the show. because they're great guys and they have a lot of great insights, and it makes a difference, as do all of you and your contributions, your voice, your opinions. What you have to say matters, and I love hearing it. I think it makes me a smarter, and it makes me a better Star Wars fan, so I thank you so much for that. So please be sure to send me your thoughts, comments, and questions, as I said before, to Coffee with Kenobi, so I can share them with everybody else. In addition to the places I just mentioned for Coffee with Kenobi, you can find me monthly on the podcast. Actually, no, that's not true. You can't find me monthly. You can find me twice a month now on Looking at Lucasfilm, which is part of the Jim Hill Media Podcast Network, and you can find me on Twitter at Mr. Zehr, M-R-Z-E-H-R, and you can find my writings on CWK's website, as well as StarWars.com and IGN. Thanks again for joining us, everybody, and don't forget to check out www.patreon.com/coffeewithkenobi to help support the show and get access to CWK pour-over each and every week. There are also t-shirts, coffee mugs, and so much more. Have an awesome week, everybody. Be sure to bundle up and stay warm, and I will see you next time. This is the podcast you're looking for.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars-related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi, unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here.